Like everything that we do in real estate, it all comes down to that relationship and that rapport with sellers. And it's the same thing with your tenants. So having those conversations, finding out what are their needs and desires, and hey, what's fair, and work that out through the process. And if you can pull it off, great, you know, do it. I know some of my tenants won't. One of my tenants is the Army Corps of Engineers. There's zero chance they're going to agree to that. They are so fixed in their ways. And so some, you just work it out in other ways.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Darren Smith served almost 6 years in the Army, and he spent the last 18 years as a professional real estate investor. He has flipped, rented, and wholesaled hundreds of residential properties, and in recent years has purchased over $10 million in real estate. And now he's full-time in commercial industrial real estate assets. Darren, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much for having me on, Sam.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. Same three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show in 90 seconds or less. Can you tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
I started back in the service, as you mentioned, in 1997, did 6 years in there, got out of the service, did a lot with computers. So I continued on with that for quite a few years, but at the same time doing residential real estate, had a mentor who was also in computers who did real estate. And I sat next to him for about a year or two. That's how I got started in real estate, was just the rich dad, poor dad, reading his books, following him along and picking his brain, everything I could, going to his rentals. And long journey up and down, had some big failures, to be perfectly honest, in the crash, but started back at the bottom in real estate back in about 2012, 13, was an assistant to a wholesaler, eventually started off doing that on my own. When I moved out to Colorado, built up a residential real estate business there over several years, and that was doing really well. Moved back to Pennsylvania, which is where I am currently. And over that time, last 4 years, have done the transition from residential to now I am 100% industrial real estate.
That is fantastic. Let's take a few minutes and talk about your transition, because you're back in Pennsylvania, transition out of residential into commercial, because I think it's a fascinating kind of story how you had a functioning business and it was making money, and yet you hung up the cleats and said, hey, I'm going to commercial real estate. Tell us that backstory.
That's pretty much what it was. I am doing residential for a while and I liked it. Don't get me wrong. It was a great business for a long time. But I really saw friends doing the commercial side. I have some that were doing all aspects of commercial, office, retail, industrial, and multifamily. And then, but most of my friends, probably 90%, are only doing multifamily commercial. And I kind of looked at all those options, and we can get into that if you want, but I chose the industrial avenue, and that's the one I've stuck with. So I've been doing that for a couple of years while running my residential business. Thankfully, I had some awesome employees. They do fantastic work. They allow me to run my business in Colorado while I live in Pennsylvania. And actually, they ran the residential business in Pennsylvania as well. So they ran both sides of the country, and it just didn't take me much time. And so I was able to do both. But as I scaled that up, as I scaled industrial, you just start looking at where you're spending your time, where you're getting your return from, and then where you see yourself. I read a book called Vivid Vision this last summer, and it really spoke to me. It's probably a lot of things your listeners have already heard, but when you really like sat down and went through an actual day and close your eyes and think about it, I didn't see myself in that residential space anymore. And so my employees, they've been so fantastic. I knew if they were able to take this and run with it on their own, they practically been running it anyway. Right. I thought, how great would that be for them? So it was a win-win, because it's great for me, because now I can focus 100% on industrial. And as we all know, when you do switch from residential to commercial, you basically add a zero or two to every deal you're doing. And so it allowed me to scale, and it will much faster, but also them. I mean, the lifestyle they're going to be able to have now running and owning that business and having all the profits, I think is going to be great for them as well. So it kind of was an easy decision, and you know, knocked it out in a couple of months. It was pretty quick.
That is absolutely intriguing, because you read the book and you said you knocked it out in a couple of months. You said, hey, man, I'm out. I'm moving into commercial full time. You gave the company away, right?
That's right.
So most people, and this is not, maybe this is the greed monster in me or whatever it is, or maybe just the like, hey, I've put years and years into building this company. And the last thing I want to do is, after all my blood, sweat, and tears, because it's really difficult to build a functioning company that produces a regular steady income, I'd say, hey, look, I've earned the right to let you guys continue to operate this, and I will collect, you know, whatever it is, maybe less, but I'm going to be more of a hands-off owner. And you said instead, look, I don't want the mental distraction, and I can bless you guys. Have a good time. That's courageous.
Why do we ultimately do a lot of what we're doing here? It's obviously there's a lifestyle component to it, but you do get to a point where giving back, you know, is important. And, you know, we think of charities, we think of, you know, I'm on Rotary and do stuff in your church, but you know, the people around you, like, you know, charity starts at home, charity starts with your employees as well. And they have given so much to me. So I really do see it as, you know, it could be seen as generous doing that to them. And maybe that was, but at the same time, they gave so much to me. So they were generous to me for so long. And as I said, it also allows me that time and that mental bandwidth to just focus on industrial. So I will benefit out of this. They will benefit out of this. And so I guess I just didn't see it quite that way when I was going through it.
And that's incredible. Very cool. So I love it. So how did you select? I'll get off of this. Like, I'm hammering home on this, but how did you select the person that would lead this company? Were they already at the top? Was it already like main lead person? You're like, hey man, I'm gonna give you the company. Or how did you decide who gets equity and who doesn't? I mean, that seems like that'd be a tough decision when you're basically giving away the farm.
It was a bit of a challenge, but since they've run it for so many years, it really, you know, the top leaders, they were pretty obvious. So it wasn't that hard of a choice. And it was just split equally, you know, between the people who were already running the show.
Gotcha. Fantastic. I love that. So let's talk industrial. Where are you finding opportunity right now? And let's start with that. I've got about 12 questions for you I can think of right, right out of the gate. But tell us how you're finding opportunity in industrial and how you plan on scaling that.
That was what was so great about starting with residential is that is, you know, dog eat dog out there. It is so competitive. I mean, I've literally spent millions of dollars in marketing on the residential side. And so to take all the lessons learned over there and then apply them back to commercial, it was honestly super simple. I took the basic core things that were working and I did them at a very high level. So in fact, I have examples here. I use the auto pen handwritten letters. I put a real stamp on them. I put a business card in every one with my picture on it. And so everything has to just be high class in how all your communications are done. And so I just took the same residential marketing I'm doing and I started with mailers. And that has been really successful for me. The cost is, gosh, a tenth of what I used to be spending on residential. And yet I get much more, many more leads from those letters that I send. And people talk about that. I just every week somebody will tell me, hey, I love that you wrote me a letter, or I love that, you know, that you wrote this out. My kids would have just typed this. Or they say, hey, you know, you look like a good looking guy or whatever, you know, and they talk about the picture. And so being able to see me as they're talking on the phone. So I want to emphasize to, you know, if anybody's looking on the commercial and they're doing residential, don't send out, you know, your 35-cent postcards on the yellow thing. You're not going to get calls. Make it, right. Your numbers are so much smaller. My whole list is less than 6,000 properties right now. I'm growing that a little by little, but not that much. Wow. We used to do hundreds of thousands, you know, on our list.
Per month.
Per month. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right. So that was how I made that transition. That's how I'm finding opportunities. I have started doing cold calling here recently, but again, I don't do the hired out yet. I may do it at a small scale, but I don't do the triple dialers. I do one at a time because I want to have that high level professionalism. You know, I want to do it where I'm speaking with the person and it talks to them and I have great conversations. I don't get the calls of, hey, take me off your list or worse, as you all know. Right. You know, when people are calling me, it's like, hey, thanks for writing. You know, what's this all about? And it's just, I love the conversations I have with commercial property owners because it's a different level of sophistication. You know, when you talked about why I made that switch as well, I think of the aggravations that we have of closing deals where, you know, you make $10,000, $20,000. And it's just like, oh my gosh, the headaches can drag out for 6 months. And not that industrial doesn't have long closing times. I mean, they can take, you know, 6 months or more. I closed property last year. I was talking to the guy for over 2 years. But when you get to the end of the road, one, your gains and your profits are significantly more. But two, you're dealing with a different level of sophistication and people that they have their lives together for the most part. You're not coming to bail them out of, you know, whatever tragedy that's, you know, half the time self-inflicted. A lot of these are, they're people that have money. I closed a 48,000 square foot warehouse last Thursday and he had more than enough money. He didn't even need the money from the sale, but I was able to help him with simplifying his life in some ways, getting him an income stream. We did a partial seller finance on this one. So it helped him with some taxes, just got him where he wanted to be. And just, it was a much easier conversation.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I love that. And the auto pen handwritten letters, is that a machine that you have there at your house or what? I mean, or your office? What are you subbing that out or what does that look like?
I don't, I use two companies. I use Open Letter Marketing, which is a great one. That's kind of turnkey. They put the stamp on, they mail it out. I have mine delivered unsealed and without a stamp. I like to put a little bit of a different stamp on. Again, that touch. I think I just ordered a couple thousand with a bouquet on them. So okay. I use Pioneer Direct and they mail them to me handwritten, open with no stamp.
Yeah, that's super cool. Yeah. And it's funny that the creativity in that, and it's the little tweaks that set you apart, right? When you're doing you know, direct mail or when you're doing cold calls or things like that. It's like, if it doesn't take a lot to be different. And I've heard some really interesting stories on this show. I mean, there's one guest who sends a Rubik's Cube in a box and it says, hey, let's figure this out, right? So he sends all of his information with a Rubik's Cube, like, let's figure this out. And he gets calls from it. Like, I mean, I think he's gone so far as to send him a pair of shoes. Like, it was some particular deal. It's like, hey, here's a pair of shoes. You know, what? I can't remember what the story was behind that, but it's really unique. Just going the extra, and that's not scalable, right? Like, it's not scalable, but yet I think it puts you at the front of the line, which is, you know, that's where you need to be. So talk to us about the type of industrial you guys are doing. Are you doing manufacturing? Are you doing warehousing? Or what are you getting into?
For me, it's really, I focus more on the square footage and the, you know, the zoning obviously has to be right. And then for me, it's location is the absolute most important factor for what I'm buying. As far as the, you know, what they're doing in the building, it's all sorts of different things. It is, it's, you know, general warehouse. One of them is actually mostly office. You know, it was kind of like that flex space. The building spot, it's a forklift rental repair service, you know, company. Did a cabinetry making, you know, business last year. That was a huge 152,000 square feet building. I did not buy that myself. That was an assignment. So I'm doing both buying, you know, and assigning properties. But really anything, as long as the things you're looking for is, you know, the location has to be number one, the condition of the property, you know, when things have been upgraded, all the same stuff you look at a house, just, you know, different terms you have to learn. But really in commercial, it comes down to the tenant. That is absolutely the most critical thing that you're looking at. And that's what banks are going to look at. So when I'm on all my hold properties, I get bank financing for the majority of it. You're just never going to find, you know, cheaper debt. I'm getting 3.5% debt right now, locked in for 7 years. I mean, you can't beat that. And so having that long-term tenant in who has been there a long time, what's their longevity? Then have they invested in the building themselves? You know, what's their credit rating? You know, have they been profitable the last several years? So those are things you really want to make sure that you lock in.
Cool. Well, let's talk about this. I mean, one of the problems that I see in long-term leases, in triple net leases, which a lot of them imagine that's what you're dealing with, your double net or triple net leases, is that they don't renew, but every 3 or 5 or whatever the renewal periods are. In a time of we're in, you know, accelerated inflation. How do you protect yourself in that?
That's an excellent question, because you're right. That's very real. And it's something that we weren't having to deal with before. So I'll tell you one way of doing it. And I lucked into this. I inherited the lease that's on the building I closed last week, but it is tied to the Philadelphia Consumer Price Index for all goods and services. So the rent automatically increases every year based on inflation. So if you can get that clause in your lease, you're obviously doing pretty well, and it's helpful. I do have some buildings that obviously don't have that baked in, and they have, I think, you know, 2.5% or 3%, you know, kind of annual increases. And those, you're right, my costs are definitely going up every single year. But what I'll say is that your costs, like let's say, you know, utilities, if it's a gross lease and you're paying utilities, they're going up significantly. But as your overall intake of the property, it's not a huge part of that income. So let's say your expenses on it are 10%. Well, even if those 10% expenses go up 50% in a year, let's just say some crazy number. Well, really, your expenses on the property have only gone up 5% as a total. Right. And so since my rent on the property went up 3%, I'm either, you know, breaking even, so I didn't make any more money that year, or maybe I lost just a little bit. But my principal pay down is obviously still going, you know, in the right direction. And my appreciation for the properties in general is going up. So if you look at what industrial is going up, I think nationwide it went up 9% last year, and I think even more the year before. And so I'm kind of baking in appreciation over time that I know when I do have renewals that come up, I'll be able to capture that. But as long as I can ride out through that period, I'm not concerned if I made the same cash flow 1 year to the next, or maybe, you know, lost a small percentage, because I know over time principal pay down and appreciation will make up for that.
Right. Yeah, that's intriguing. How hard would it be to on lease renewal, or how agreeable do you think tenants would be to saying, hey, we're tying all our leases now to the Philadelphia Consumer Price Index? I mean, as a landlord and the owner, I mean, that's especially when we see numbers just, I mean, we saw what, 6.7% mm-hmm. published. You know, maybe not even the actual, because they don't count the things that all of us have to pay for every day. So it's like, you know, how hard would that be to pull off, you think?
Sam, that's a great question. And I just learned about on this. I read that for the first time a couple of months ago. And this is the first lease I have with that. So I wish I could speak more to it, but I can't. What I will tell you is, like everything that we do in real estate, it all comes down to that relationship and that rapport with sellers. And it's the same thing with your tenants. So having those conversations, finding out what are their needs and desires, and hey, what's fair, and work that out through the process. And if you can pull it off, great, you know, do it. I know some of my tenants won't. One of my tenants is the Army Corps of Engineers. There's zero chance they're going to agree to that. They are so fixed in their ways. And so some, you just work it out in other ways.
Right. Yeah. Good luck on that. Good luck getting the Corps of Engineers to agree to a CPI based or, you know, the least tied to the CPI. That's wild, man. That's absolutely fantastic. Are you buying across the country or are you sticking to specific markets?
I'm sticking to just my market. If I can't drive there in 2 hours, I'm not going to look at it. And I know people that do it both ways. And for me, I get a little bit of ADD and I need to focus. Like I can't do too many things at one time. My brain just doesn't function that way. So if I'm in too many markets, I want to be the master of where I'm at.
Yeah. How did you build that 6,000 property list? I mean, it seems like this would be a fairly broker controlled asset class. So, and you're going all off market direct to seller. Is that right? Or are you also working with brokers?
I do both.
Questions in there. Sorry.
Yeah, I do both. I work with brokers as well. In fact, I've wholesaled buildings through brokers where I have it under contract to either lease or sell the building. And I have that worked out with the seller. They, you know, the owner, they know what I'm doing. And so I've listed properties on, you know, the commercial MLS, if you want to call it that, and sold them that way. So brokers are a great asset. One of the properties that I own, in fact, the first property I bought was a listed property. It just sat for a while, but I still have to talk with the sellers. I never buy a property where I'm not sitting down with the seller because I got partial seller finance on that one as well. And so you need to have that conversation to really make it a win-win. If you're just going out submitting cash offers or blind offers through brokers, you basically have no shot in this market. Don't even waste your time, to be honest. Right. It's wasting broker's time. It's wasting everybody's time. Where I get my data, I use Reonomy, R-E-O-N-O-M-Y is the source I've been using the last year. I recently got CoStar access as well. And so I've been pulling lists from there. And I think it's easyexcel.com or Maury is his name and he has a website and Excel macros where he will combine all your data for you and do this cool stuff. So he makes these macros. I combine my files together and then that's what I take and I load that into Mojo Dialer. I send that off to my mailer to get them done.
Right. Yeah. And I'll link to Maury as well. I know exactly who you're talking about. I think he's somewhere out in California, but yeah, makes some really cool. Excel wizard. So
anything.
Yeah. And he will custom build some crazy widgets inside of Excel that you're like, this thing could launch a rocket. What are we doing here?
Seriously.
So that's really cool. I love it, man. This is great. Darren, thanks for coming on today. I've certainly enjoyed this. Let's jump here into the final four questions. The first one is this, which you've answered, like you've taken most of my first question already, but what is one tool or resource, think digital software, something along those lines you find you can't live without?
I'll go complete old school. Google Sheets. I've had all these high powered CRMs and Salesforce and all this stuff. And I've gone back to Google Sheets. And my most important thing is I put a column with the next follow-up date. And every morning I just sort by that date and what's due and knock them out.
Right. I love that. That's great. What is one mistake you could help our listeners avoid? And then how would you avoid it?
The one I probably did was, I made many, many, many. One that comes to mind is I got laid off from a very well-paying computer consultant job 6 years ago. And I thought I got this real estate thing. I was making money and I was doing okay. And my wife had recently got out of her fellowship. So I thought, okay, I got this. I can make the transition. I don't need to go get another job because I could have got one the next day. And I didn't. And that was a mistake because if I had gone back and got another one for maybe another year or two, I would have been able to take more of my profits from real estate and hold on to more properties. And I would be further along than I am right now had I not done that. So I'm not saying don't make the leap eventually, but just make sure that you have enough of a base. And then also that you've put some bank money in your portfolio where you have property leverage that way, because your W-2 is a huge asset for that. And I didn't have that for a number of years.
Right, man, I love that. That's great. Cool. Question number three, when it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
So for investing side, if we're talking specifically just with the business and not charity, what I'm trying to do is I think everything I see like Mike Rowe doing and these other people where the word jobs, where people with skilled training is so critical right now and so lacking. And so we have a manufacturer association here in town. In fact, I'm meeting with the president of that next week. We're having breakfast and I want to matching up the people who are my buildings that have these jobs, these high skilled jobs that are needed with the manufacturer association. So we can put those two together for apprenticeships and things like that. I said, it's in my vivid vision. I have it all planned out what I want to do perfectly. The full disclosure, I am in the beginning stages of that. It's what I am working on at this time.
I love that. Darren, if our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Yep. My company is Solid Growth Properties. So Darren, D-A-R-R-E-N at solidgrowthproperties.com. Shoot me an email. I'm happy to connect with any and everybody, whether it be they're interested in industrial real estate or whether on the private money side. I do make quite a bit of money and send out a lot of checks every week to my private lenders, and that works really well for them.
Fantastic. Darren, thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Sam. Have a great day.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor, And subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.